morning cues. It's so much fun.
It has been a minute.
It's been.
Hey, unfuckers. Welcome into Show Notes. It's just me and 99.
Who else would be here?
Hanging in the studio. Nobody else would be here.
Should we invite our friend on?
Manny on the other side of the glass? Or our friend
that
here?
Man or on the other side?
No.
Why? You might have something to say.
Nothing appropriate.
Oh, the Billy Joel sucks.
Yeah, our friend here that we're in the office with does not like Billy Joel. And that's a big problem for us.
He's like a personal, it's like a personal hatred though.
It is.
Different.
It's deep.
It goes deep, yeah.
It goes deep. It's like, not about the music.
We allow it.
It's about the person.
Yeah.
But he's actually quite childish. He's quite childish about the whole thing, and he's giving us the finger right.
Double bird.
Wow.
We just said we are okay with it.
She said she's okay with it.
I did get his baby a Billy Joel lullaby CD.
Did you?
Mm-hmm. When he was born.
Oh, and you know what? I'm overdue on getting him a Mets cap.
Oh, yes.
To turn him into a Mets fan. He's got family trying to turn him into a Red Sox fan. He's a devoted Yankees fan. And yeah, so we're all coming at him pretty hard trying to turn
his
kid.
Sooner become a Mets fan than a Red Sox fan.
I would think so. I think I have a better shot of converting a kid. Yeah. This baby's so goddamn cute too. Oh my God. He's adorable. So anyway. If you're hearing this, it is, if I have the math down, it is after the release. The long-awaited tortured release of our pharmacy benefit manager, American Drug Cartel show. And just a quick note on that. I hope to get a lot of feedback from unfuckers on that one. So structurally, it was probably the most difficult episode to pull off so far because if you've listened to it already, you know that we have a very long interview with a gentleman named Antonio Chacha. From 46 Brooklyn, even though he's not a New Yorker, he's from Ohio. And the work that Antonio did, I thought was just so vital that I wanted to incorporate it into the main episode, which is different for us. So we usually do an episode and maybe a phone a friend to append to it. So it was structurally, it was a little difficult to pull off, but I think the questions and the flow of our conversation really worked in with the broader narrative that I was trying to achieve. So hopefully everybody dug it. The reason for all of the delays hopefully is also self-evident in that it's a really meaty and difficult, complex subject. It shouldn't be. It should be rather straightforward, but it's so complex and layered that a lot of people outside of the healthcare industry don't talk about it. But it's one of the ones that if you caught the entire episode and you caught 99.9 post-show musings, I was saying that I have at least some degree of optimism that the Federal Trade Commission will be able to get some transparency there and that Congress will pass one or a handful of the measures in front of them that came out of committee to be able to rein them in. And really only two things need to happen there. Total transparency in the supply chain in terms of pricing and where the markups and the rebates happen, and then actually prohibiting rebates. That second piece is going to be tough because I think it makes up a significant portion of the revenue of these monster companies. So you can expect a pitched battle. But the interesting thing is there's pretty much alignment. You can see a crackdown happening theoretically under a second Biden term or a second Trump term. That's how aligned the parties are behind the scenes on this one. So it'll be interesting to see what happens next. It also could, in a second Trump term, I imagine, just be something that falls by the wayside because, you know, we might have a divided Congress and nothing will happen. But it's one of the things that right now I can imagine in a second Biden term that it would be taken care of. And then, of course, if RFK's the president, then there will be no such thing as vaccines or medications or drugs or anything like that. And they'll just shut all the industries down.
Yeah, that's going to happen.
And that'll help everybody, I think, right? No more life-saving drugs for anybody.
Speaking of RFK and third-party candidates, have you seen that your boy
went
on the man that we...
Dr. West?
Yes.
What about?
Went on Joe Rogan?
Oh, no. Did he? How did that go?
I don't know. This is me relaying it from my roommate who saw it on TikTok.
After considering her proclamation, 99 went back and checked. Apparently, Dr. West appeared on Joe Rogan's podcast, quote, 4 fucking years ago, end quote. She continues to question her roommate's ability to not get things wrong. Now back to our program.
Interesting.
He said he was explaining socialism to Joe Rogan, and Joe Rogan was like, yeah, the rich guys, blah, blah, blah. And which I think I was saying, like, that's kind of the problem. Well, one of the problems with Rogan is that sometimes he's on our side.
Yeah.
And so that's where he can, like, get people in and be like, yeah, I'm against rich people, too. Mm-hmm. And blah, blah, you know, even though he's fucking rich. But and then he goes and says something like, don't use sunscreen or whatever. You know, so it's like you're really getting a mixed bag here. But yeah, I was curious you had thoughts on it.
Yeah, he's the half of the libertarian that appeals to the Bernie wing of the socialists. And then the other half of him appeals to the rabid right wing side. So it's, yeah, he is certainly a mixed bag. That's a good way to put it.
And 50 Cent, he's now a Republican.
Is he?
Yes, he posted something about Lauren Boebert being one of our fine Congress people.
Really?
Is she a congressperson?
Yeah.
Okay. I thought I misspoke.
Not for long. I think she's going to lose.
What do you mean? She's doing such a great job.
She's doing a fantastic job.
50 Cent loves her.
Oh, well, yeah. This could be the endorsement that she really needed to put her over the top. She's in a crowded field in a brand new district. And I think that's going to be a problem for her. Especially, did you see the clip of the debate where the moderator was just haranguing her over her Beetlejuice
Oh my God.
Thing?
I mean, in fairness to her, that's not relevant to her platform.
No, it's not relevant to really anything.
With her personal life in a public theater, it's gone well for so many people. It's gone well for Pee Wee, that other old man, that old man, also R.I.P. that man. You know, the old guy, the older man in Anchorman, who's like the boss. He's like, he's a character actor.
I do.
He got caught jerking in a theater, I think.
Oh, no.
He was, I think it was a porn theater.
Okay.
So it's like, that's what it's there for.
Is he dead as well? Right. That's what you're saying? Oh, that guy. Yeah. Fred Willard.
Yeah.
He
got caught jerking in a
theater. Yeah, he did.
So it's really, like, she's learning from the greats that it goes really well when you masturbate in public or masturbate someone else in public.
Somebody else, yeah.
Alanis Morissette and Dave Coulier.
Built a career on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm shocked that I have 4 examples of this.
That was pretty tight.
not as like as I'm impressed that I could think of them. I'm impressed that society has them.
Mm-hmm.
And I bet I'm missing hundreds.
Louis C.K., not public.
Well, that was...
That was private jerking.
Well, but that was jerking in a non-consensual. At women.
Yeah, yeah.
Trapping them in a hotel room and pulling his penis out. And
but he did ask if he could. Right. Which I think
he should be exonerated.
Totally. Well, he has been.
I mean,
he's still selling
all of the women,
right?
Harvey Weinstein invited, like they went there consensually, obviously.
Of course,
and there was no power dynamics.
Nope.
Everyone went there of their own accord.
Yep.
So it's like, I don't understand why we even bother.
Yeah.
These people, these men, mostly men, they're all innocent.
Yeah.
But anyway, Lauren Boebert.
Agreed.
She should be able to do what she wants. She'd be able to.
Except in Congress.
Jerk it in Beetlejuice and jerk it in Moulin Rouge and jerk it in Mamma Mia.
I mean,
jerk it in Matilda.
What else?
Yeah. That's where you know.
In Mamma Mia, what else are you going to do?
Yeah.
But jerk it.
Exactly. I mean, have you seen the dancing?
It's pretty jerkable. It's pretty pullable.
well.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I did something really lame and I'm
going
to keep with it. I'm going to keep on jerking it. The thing that I did that's really lame is I started a TikTok account for UNFTR.
I wish it was a personal TikTok account.
Actually, I started 2 because I forgot that I started the first one. And so I started.
Is the username different?
I figured out how to delete the other one.
Good.
So it's back.
All right.
And I put up a couple videos there. And
you put up videos on TikTok?
Yeah. You'll be super proud of me. We have 3-5 followers. And so far, they've gotten 2 views. So
if I log into this TikTok on my phone.
On the TikTok.
Are they going to be able to track my data, my personal data?
Without a doubt.
But if it's not my name, are they still going to? Because that's why I avoid it.
Yeah, sure.
I know everyone else has my data too. I'm just like, I might as well not give it to a 30th company.
Yeah. So, and that's going to sell it to
again,
700 others.
I guess this means you have to give me work phone so I can make TikTok.
You need a burner.
Yeah.
Yeah, you need a burner. But I think that they catch up to you there as well.
You have daughters. I'm sure they have an old iPhone they could give me.
So my wife was going to, you know, this is graduation time. We have like a whole bunch of stuff going on. And it's just like, there's like one like mini
function. Your wife's graduating from high school.
She is. She is. She's legal. There's like one little function after another, and she put on, she didn't have time to go get her nails did. So she found old press on nails and, she bought them a year ago on Amazon.
It's not that bad.
And she put them on.
Okay. She look cute.
And
she's serving.
Fucking adorable. And, she remarked when we were together, she's like, look at these. I bought these nails on Amazon a year ago. And I was so glad I found it because I didn't have time to get my nails done. But don't they look good? And I said, they look great. That was it. Just minutes later, she got served an ad for those nails. Now, it had been a year, not an ad, to review the nails that she bought on Amazon from a year ago.
That's a coincidence.
A year ago.
That's too crazy.
Are they listening that fucking closely? Is it possible?
I don't know. That's why I always feel like I feel like a conspiracy theorist when I talk. Like,
I know,
because it's very, because we work in related industries, so we sort of follow these things.
We know it's we know it's possible.
Yeah, but it always feels too much.
Yeah,
that would happen. I mean, I really need you to watch Parks and Rec, because there's a whole in the last season. There's a fake company called Grizzle, mm-hmm. and they're basically Amazon.
Okay.
And they do everything. And so they have Grizzle phones, and people start getting these Grizzle boxes, which are like personalized boxes of things. And what they're data mining to get to get what you want. So like one of the women is like, I got like a bear, like a honey, like a jar of honey and something else. Like, these are pet names. Me and my husband only call each other in texts. So that's how they figure out their data mining. But it's like, I think we're getting to that point in the Amazon lore where Grizzle is not a farce anymore. We are in Grizzle world.
Anyway, I thought that was super weird. So yeah, if you don't have TikTok, don't download it just for us. If you have it though, why don't you go on over and give us a follow so we have more than 5 followers there.
Are we at UNFTR pod?
I don't even fucking know. I'm being honest.
Can you check?
Just search us.
Well, you have your phone.
I think it's UNFTR pod. I don't know.
Let me check our email.
Okay. Well, 99 is checking that.
We want to send the people to the place.
Of course, I'm leaning into this attention economy. But so recently I've been thinking a lot about the work that we do here and watching, you know, kind of what other channels do and what other pods do, and had a few conversations.
A young Sheldon video is playing.
All right.
I was trying to figure out what our username is. Sorry.
So it recently had a couple of conversations with some people that had reached out to the show just to ask about kind of broadening our reach and different technologies that we could use and things like that. And so I've been doing, you know, a lot of soul searching about the show, as I always do. And there's so many like cheap tricks and things and short videos and different podcasts and things that we could do to jam the feed up. It's like the equivalent of like keyword stuffing on a page to try and rank for it. And it's just not how my brain works. So that's my long way of explaining why sometimes it does take me a really long time to get something out the door. So I know we had a couple weeks there between the Max Unfiltered episode and then doing a rerun where we didn't have anything brand new. But it's because we're just pouring everything we got into these real deep dive explanations. And that is what Unfucking the Republic is. So no apologies, just an explanation for why it took so long to kind of get that out the door.
And like you said, it's a big time. Your wife's graduating high school. She's about to go to college. You have to prepare yourself.
I am so sad to see her go.
Empty nester.
I hope she remains faithful
to me. It's a good thing you found her when you did.
I know.
Got in early.
In nursery school.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the only other bit of housekeeping is that we've got our sticker pack going out to our membership. Comrade and above, I believe. Is that right?
Professional
and above sticker packs going out. Pretty cool. This is my favorite sticker pack so far because it is Bakunin themed and I love them and I'm putting them on everything. So
I'm thinking of a promotion
Oh,
I'm going to, we'll talk about it. Let's talk about live on air because you could just say yes or no.
Okay, great.
We can delete it if you say no and this will never happen.
Go for it.
So what if we offer for like, if you upgrade your membership, while supplies are available, we'll give you an archive sticker pack.
That's a great idea.
If you upgrade even from a curious to a comrade and then like shoot me an email and say like, I upgraded, I will send you one of our sticker packs.
Done.
Okay.
For a limited time only while supplies last.
Supplies last.
I love it.
Okay.
Cool.
So I might send a little email about that. To
Yay. All right. So let's dig into the heart of all of the matters ahead of us. We have a few weeks of notes to catch up on. So 99 has curated some of the top level feedback that we've gotten so we can get through it. Just want to mention that as we're talking here, and of course, we have to keep touching on what's new in the election cycle. There was apparently a criminal case in New York that featured one of the ex-presidents. I haven't dug far enough into Teddy it Roosevelt? To figure out which one it is. Teddy's dead, so I don't think it was Behan. I don't think it was posthumous.
I went to trivia last night. I took a picture of one of the questions to show you, and it's relevant. Okay.
Okay.
Listen to this.
Let's go.
So, as of today, 45, this will help you figure out which president was tried.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
As of today, 45 individuals have served as president of the U.S. 10 of those presidents have a common last name with another president, leaving 40 last names since 1776. If you sorted the last names alphabetically, what would the final 8 names be? So, you know, there's duplicates. You take those out.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Van Buren. Is that last?
I think so.
We
missed that one.
You missed that one.
There's some after Van Buren.
Oh, well, George Washington. Zachary Taylor.
We missed him too.
Tyler. Trump. Oh, goodness.
I just said one.
Take the Roosevelts out of it.
No, they're still in it. Roosevelt. There's just not two. So like if you sort
Bush
them.
And Bush, you mean?
No. Yeah. But like if you sorted them alphabetically, we
had oh, oh I see what you're so saying. I'd say so one. We can use it. Okay. Yeah. So Roosevelt is in there. Polk?
No.
I'm past it already?
Yeah. I think R was the highest letter.
Reagan?
Yep. Think bathtub.
Bathtub.
Yeah.
Taft.
And one more. Think volleyball.
Volleyball. Owen Wilson. Thank you.
Isn't that fun?
I missed the bathtub reference.
There's like that urban legend that Taft got stuck in a bathtub because he was
I didn't know that.
You've never heard
no,
that?
No, that's amazing.
I think they taught us in elementary school, but it's fake. Yeah. They say they had to get like a crane to lift him out or something.
Oh, wow. Man, that made me nervous. Live trivia, that makes me nervous. I'm the one that usually conducts trivia, so it makes me smarter than I appear.
But yeah, we did pretty well. We thought Obama, we added Obama, and then I can't remember who we added, but we missed. And also, I'm doing this off memory. I don't have the answers in front of me. So if I went too early, like if I went back too far, don't blame me. Yeah, we totally forgot about Van Buren.
Yeah.
And we totally forgot about Tyler or Taylor.
I think Van Buren's a New Yorker. Oops. I think, is it Van Buren and Fillmore that are New Yorkers?
Dude, I just told you I didn't even remember him.
I could be wrong on all of that.
But yeah, so one of those people, it's probably Van Buren, because you said he was tried in New York. The trial was in New York.
I think he's also dead.
I don't know.
I got to look it up.
I think he's running again.
So it's not Biden, right? I know that.
Well, he should be in jail.
And Kennedy's not president yet, but he will be.
Right. Maybe it was Wes.
Listen, so it's either Van Buren or Trump. I think that's what we nailed down here. So there's that. And I've seen limited polling. And the Times did its level best the other day to try to suggest that it's changing the minds, that the conviction is changing the minds of would-be Trump voters.
No.
I'm dubious.
Maybe 5 of them.
I'm like, dubious to say the 5. Least. Yeah.
He raised more money than he ever had. And didn't he break his site?
$34 million in a matter of hours. Staggering.
And I got to give away stickers to get people to give us money.
And so, did you see the Jon Stewart Cheshire Cat? It's worth checking out and watching his thing, because at the end, it's perfectly executed that the way that Biden walks away from the microphone.
When I saw
eyes on it.
Yes, I did. I saw the video
of a bad 70s sitcom. His Cheshire Cat.
It did kind of make me laugh a little bit.
Oh, it totally made me laugh. It was so bad. It was so poorly timed and executed even worse to try and take advantage of that fucking moment in time. And so they blew that. So what does he do instead? He lays down yet another red line in Gaza that Israel blows over, which makes him look even more feckless, and then says, I've brought a peace proposal to the table that Hamas needs to accept. The only problem is that's the proposal that was already on the table that Israel said fucking no to.
Right.
So it wasn't in coordination with the Israeli government. And Hamas has already agreed to it. And so he looks completely out of step and out of sync with the process of what's going on. And the reason that Netanyahu isn't down for it is because the hard right of his party has already said, if you accept this, you're fucking toast. You're done. And they're going to kick him out of government. And
anyway,
he's trying to get control of that situation through optics, because he knows that I think what he's planning on is that people do only read the headlines and that they don't know that there wasn't a peace process in process.
Which it definitely, I mean, when I saw it the first time, I was like, oh, that's good news. And then I learned more about it.
Right.
So like, if I didn't learn more about it, I would have still been thinking there's hope.
But the people who follow this, so the core of Americans that actually care about this,
which is a actually know the amount,
they know the difference, and they are doing the research on it because they're tied to it and they're tethered to the news cycle right now.
Yeah.
And so the other thing that he does to try and recapture some sort of authority in the presidency is he just illegally shut down the fucking border. It just happened.
And it was on the Biden, like, good news Twitter or whatever. Like,
oh my God.
It was like, I don't know who runs the Twitter. I can't say it's the White House, but it's like good Biden updates or something. And people were like, you think this is good? What's wrong with you?
So let's just walk through this for 1 second and try to figure out who they're attempting to appeal to. They must be assuming that somebody is going to come over. That's the calculus that you always make when you see these big decisions. Somebody's going to move over to this side. Well, it won't be anybody in the progressive wing.
Right.
Core Democrats have been pretty vocal that they are worried and upset about the border crisis. And for anybody that hasn't dug into our series, I think we did a really good job. Not us, but we brought on some like amazing resources to really contextualize what's happening at the border. And what's happening to the social services systems of the people that are being overwhelmed in certain cities and certain border towns. But core Democrats aren't the problem. That's not who he's going to lose. So trying to appeal to the core Democrats to kind of reinforce, I guess, turnout maybe is part of the strategy. But what he's losing is the progressive wing and anybody that would have been on the right and voted for Obama. So I don't understand what the campaign calculus is in the Biden White House and in coordination with the DNC to make these the policies that he goes forward with, because all he's doing is doing what Trump would be doing. It just, none of it makes any sense to me. Where is it getting lost in translation that the most popular things that everybody loves are progressive? They want better social safety nets. They want more paid time off. They want paid family leave. They want more prescription drugs covered. And they want to be able to pay their fucking bills. Like, the border crisis is just what it is. It is a crisis. And he does need to get control of it. You don't get control of it by locking it down, because all that does is create a different crisis on the other side of the border and lead to more illegal activity instead of asylum seeking, where you can register people. So you go through this whole process of rolling out an app to get people to register. You know where everybody is. You've got their information. You can actually interact with people. And so the move is to add more executive order, add more judges, just fill the courts with more judges and backstop the system so it can adjudicate some of these asylum seekers. you don't just lock the border down, because the unintended consequences of doing that is going to create a ripple effect, not today, but in a couple months from now, at exactly the time when everybody's going to be paying the most attention to it. And so the Republicans are going to be able to say in a couple of months, he is completely inept and incapable of managing this situation, and it's created an emergency on the other side of a border of the border and contributed to more illegal crossings and fewer asylum seekers. And by the way, the Democrats and the progressives and anybody on the left side knows that what he just did is patently illegal under our constitutional law and international law. So there's no real gain here. This isn't part of the solution. We unearthed what the solutions are. The solutions are to partner with nations below the border to increase the heft in the judicial system to be able to adjudicate these claims. Those are really the only two options that we know are effective, and there is still time to pull that off. And instead, he just figures, oh, we ran out of time. Fuck it. I'm going to close the border and hope for the best. And on the other side of things, with his continual red lines that get... He is being embarrassed in Israel-Palestine.
He's embarrassing himself.
He's embarrassing himself, and he looks so out of step with everybody in his own administration, everybody in Congress, and certainly among the American people.
It makes you wonder, you know, because you always think like, oh, there's a whole team of people behind him that are making decisions, but it makes you wonder if there really aren't.
Yeah.
This guy's in front of his Twitter tweeting himself or telling some, you know, 12-year-old intern to do it so they don't know what to say, but like, how is anybody making it through? How is this going through discussion groups? And is it really just, is everything we know a lie that the president really just does things and says things and it's not like a council of people behind him advising him?
I guess so. He really is just large and in charge. I mean, it's just, it defies all sort of political logic.
It's funny that where he takes inspiration from Obama, but there is so much more tact behind what Obama did.
And totally.
There's just...
And trust.
Emulating.
And gravitas and all of those other soft disciplines that go into statecraft.
Right. There is none.
Just screaming at cameras. This is stupid. Anyway, let's get into some feedback here. We're going to start with Jason S. Jason S. is a good friend of the show, is one of the represents one of the organizations that we throw our support behind because it's a local activism organization. So let's get into what he said. He said, I just listened to the Pause Reset episode and I'm jazzed to see where you go with this. I know you have plenty of channels to discuss possible topics, but I don't really get into social media, so I'm throwing my ideas here. Citizens assemblies, which use the random jury selection model for policymaking. It's currently relegated to policy advising as it's trying to get a toehold. Eventually, it could be used for policymaking and even, eventually, replacing elected officials as we have them today. For historical context, David Graeber identifies in The Dawn of Everything that it was a model of democracy that predates the Greek model and was widespread. A few organizations are also promoting and facilitating the use of the model, worth looking into Healthy Democracy, the American Public Trust, and Democracy Next. I have contacts in each of these organizations and would be happy to make introductions. Anything about local government? Local government is the farm league for state and national politics. So true. If we can get things right at local levels, it can scale up. Sure, we need big changes on the international and national levels, but that's out of many people's reach, outside of letters to representatives and protesting. Local government is within reach of many, and I think an episode or more about the mechanics and how to get involved would be incredibly beneficial for unfuckers. I love that Jason has made himself available to talk through this and talk about it. And I think doing an episode about how to just get involved at the local level would be really, really beneficial. So we will take Jason up on that and get after it. So thank you for that feedback.
So then we heard from Rhea from PR who said, I meant to say earlier that I needed to hear that from you, that rant. I am tired, sick, angry, frustrated, sad, despairing from waking up every day like Bill Murray in Groundhog Day. How many innocent people were martyred by the occupation today? How many doctors, healthcare workers, aid workers, women, children? I don't think there are any journalists left for them to kill. What new horrors did they unleash? What new injustice? And the gaslighting mainstream and legacy press whitewashing everything in a thick coat of but anti-Semitism. Personally, I think it's awful that the Zionists conflate anything and everything with anti-Semitism. Jewish people have suffered enough historically. Anti-Semitism is real and malignant, but anti-Semitism is not equal to criticizing atrocities and rejecting genocidal actions and historic settler colonialism by a Euro-white supremacist, hyper-militarized and nuclear-armed to the teeth ethno-state. It is not equal to opposing and protesting genocide, ethnic cleansing, what have you. I am not Jewish. I cannot know how 99 or other regular Jewish folk may feel about all this. I empathize and respect their right to their feelings. Seems that many young U.S. Jewish folk don't feel threatened by protests as they robustly participate and organize some of said protests. So that is confusing. But Max, thank you. Your rant was on point, and as usual, you are sensitive and respectful.
So, Maria, I think that's all well stated and self-explanatory. I think you did a great job with that. One thing that I've noticed lately, though, is that, and maybe it's because the campus protests are done and we've sort of ridden that media wave, and there's different things to be looking forward to in the summertime, but I feel like the intensity of the coverage has begun to dissipate a little bit. The attention that we're paying on social media and what have you is beginning to dissipate a little bit. And that has to, I mean, that's part of the core strategy, of course. That's part of Putin's strategy in Ukraine. That's part of the strategy of Netanyahu's strategy, is hopefully it just wears people down to the point where they can't physically be interested in it anymore. It's just too draining. That's a real danger. And I think we need to all kind of collectively do our best to keep it in public eye, because just as we're recording this, it was announced that the day before, so we're recording this, what day is today? Thursday?
Thursday, 6th.
So I guess on the Wednesday, yesterday, there was a bombing of a school, of a children's school, and a number of children were killed. But Israel came right out and didn't apologize or say they're investigating it. They said they were targeting militants. End of story. And I guarantee by the time you listen to this, that story will be very much in the rear view. So that is a core strategy, is to wear people down. As it relates to anti-Semitism, I feel the same thing is also true, is that as it dies down in the mainstream media, there's sort of an exhale, and there might be corners of the internet and there might be, areas where anti-Semitism is flaring up, but it's not as visible. And so we're not talking about it as much, and it's just as uncomfortable. But it doesn't mean that the genocide is sort of coming to a conclusion. And it doesn't mean that anti-Semitism isn't real. Like, these things are always still there and bubbling below the surface.
You know, is one thing that this is completely anecdotal, but for me, what's happening is I'm not becoming anti-Semitic, but I'm becoming like lightly prejudiced to, if I'm on a dating app and I see a guy says he's Jewish, which is normally what would I, be more inclined to swipe, because culturally, I don't have to explain myself.
No, you do not.
So I would be more inclined to swipe normally. But nowadays I'm like, I don't know. Like, what if, is this person going to be so fundamentally different from my belief system? Mm. And even like Jewish celebrities, I'm finding myself couching, like, is this person, are they, what do they think? How do they, where I'm, it's almost like I'm turning against my own people, because I'm afraid of what they think and feel. And obviously I catch myself, and it's like bias going through. I mean, it literally is bias going through that lens of being like, okay, I need to this, I didn't feel like this a year ago. I didn't have to think about it, but also there weren't millions of people were in danger all the time. So, well, that TBD, they sort of were, but you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's like a weird thing that's happening where, I don't feel like there's as much anti-Semitic rhetoric online. There's the same level there always was. I feel like the wave has sort of fallen a little bit.
Yeah.
I find my own like prejudice bubbling up, which is, I don't like it.
It's a really interesting thing. That's a really interesting phenomenon. So I think it's indicative of the general sentiment that the Jewish people are so familiar with. So outside of you feeling that way as a Jew, I think the Jewish people understand this at a level that others do not appreciate. And it's why you have to continue to press the lessons of history, even in this context, as uncomfortable as that might be. And that's why I wanted to give a message to my fellow leftists, like, everybody's feelings in this situation are really valid. And you can't just dismiss them and discount them, because the sentiment that you're feeling, and that is your personal sentiment about your people and your lived experience, and then questioning your bias. Others that are not Jewish, they don't have to question that bias. They can just kind of hold that, and it begins to calcify. And so we have a whole new generation, yet again, of people that are calcifying this idea that Jewishness is otherness.
That I think is, it's definitely valid, because in conversation with people, I can see them doing the same thing I'm doing, but it's sort of like a, I can do that, but you can't.
Yep.
Because I'm allowed to, you know, I'm allowed to think this way about my people and go through the motions, but like, you can't just turn on us because, because how long does it take? Because I'm never going to get to the place where I'm, I mean, some Jewish people might get to a place of extreme self-loathing. I mean, there's a whole I don't know, thought in the true sense of a meme thought idea about that. But I know personally I'll never get there because I just don't have it in me. But they can, other people can. So that, you're right. I think that is, it is, it's an, it's going to be a new generation of people, of Gen Z, Gen Alpha.
Going through those mental gymnastics.
Or just.
And thinking about the otherness of Jewish people.
Or not even thinking about it, like in terms of, not even contextualizing it well, of just, who knows what their parents thought and taught them, the same way that any racism exists. But now it's always been acceptable racism or prejudice. Well, I mean, you can call it racism because Jewish people are a race, but not everyone believes that, which is another thing. So there's so many layers here.
Yeah.
But yeah, now because, you know, because like, in, if you grew up in a racist household, your parents, if they're racist, they probably are saying bad things about Black people, about Latino people. Like they probably are. But if you grew up in like a normal, I'm going to say normal, I don't, I'm not apologizing to the racist families. If you grew up in a normal household where those thoughts were not, you know, expressed to you, but maybe there was a little like digging a Jewish person there, here or there.
Casual anti-Semitism is very much a thing.
And so now it's like, oh, but now we can just talk about it out loud.
Right.
So I didn't even think about that. The ripple effects through the younger generations. Yeah. That's troubling.
Where we started the series, remember, on Israel-Palestine is going through the history of anti-Semitism and the history of Jewish people living in multiple cultures and the diaspora, and making the point that the Jewish experience throughout history is singular in that respect. It is a religion, it is a culture, it is a race, it is an identity, and it has always been homeless up until the point that it was established as a Jewish state, which in and of itself is problematic to have an ethnic state, just as it's problematic to have an Islamic state, just as it's problematic to have whatever the fuck we're becoming here of hyper-nationalist, you know, tendencies. It's all problematic in its own right, but only the Jewish experience is singular throughout all of history. And the same fear, I still come back to the same fear, which is the overarching narrative that the right-wing government of Israel is endangering the Jewish people globally more so than any other factor possible because of the amplification of this particular war and the way that it is being prosecuted on a people that have now garnered the sympathies of people that never thought about them ever before this, ever. So that's the intrinsic danger with the way that this is all shaping up. And our current president does not have an answer for this. And I am worried.
Yeah. The one thing I want to, in the context of the show, you know, we haven't done show notes in a couple of weeks. And the one set of feedback I didn't include was from the Scott Galloway episode, because I think we had like a pretty lengthy kind of show notes, pseudo show notes after. And yeah, I think because it is so like the student protest news is old at this point, because we've just moved on and like different things are happening. So I just wanted to call that out, that it's absent from the show notes because like it's weeks old.
There and gone.
Yeah. And in the blink of an eye. And now it's just.
Now, there will be disruptions. There was a massive disruption just recently of an event, and you'll see protests flare up. I don't know if we're going to see anything on the scale of Black Lives Matter or the Women's March over the summer. This is going to be a weird summer. This is going to be a very strange summer because we are like a tinderbox right now. It's hard to say which thing could push us over the top. But if you've got extreme weather and you've got extreme heat, and then you've got the Democratic National Convention coming up, and then the debates raging on, and if Trump is sentenced to actually do some time, no matter when it is, there's a weird cocktail of potential things that could go very, very wrong. And it's hard to predict how it's all going to flare up. I mean, maybe it doesn't. Maybe we just kind of cruise through this election cycle and shit happens and there's low voter turnout and there's apathy and people just throw their hands up. But I feel like we're spoiling for something a little different. Anyway, getting into some general feedback here. I'm glad you pulled this one. I loved it when I saw it. Michael said, listener since the beginning, dude, who have you created this show for? I'm a blue collar lefty with a blue collar education in trade school. I do try to improve my understanding of vocabulary and concepts, but praxis just left me screaming in my car. What the fuck does praxis mean? This is not the first time this has happened when trying to understand where you're going in a podcast. Who is this podcast for? I guess it's a good question. Because if you felt that way, it's real. It's for anybody and everybody that wants to understand from a left perspective why we are fucked. The point of bringing up praxis was because I was responding to
a commenter on
another
YouTube.
Comment that said,
do we need another hot take?
Yeah.
We need praxis.
Exactly. So praxis is putting things into practice. It is the actual work that goes into policymaking and making change. And so I picked up on that because it's obviously a big term in Marxism. And I was trying to kind of connect the dots between the ethereal and the work that's being done and trying to at least contextualize why sometimes it's okay to just go off on a hot take. But yes, we need to return to praxis. And it was a good way to kick off actually the PBM episode, because if we're going to talk about praxis, like getting deep into the weeds of healthcare, which affects every single American, and talking about the things that need to change in the regulatory environment and on the ground so that people can actually get their medicine, that's praxis. That's like real work. So that's what I was alluding to. And I didn't mean for that to be off-putting in any way. We're not supposed to be highbrow. It's called Unfucking the Republic, but we cover some very highbrow concepts. And the bridge that I'll give you, Michael, that I think is incredibly cool is if you look back at the original leftists, like the hardcore, the Marxists and the communists and the revolutionaries that have inspired a lot of the deep critical thinking about how we should structure and organize society, there were some that were enlightened and came from the upper classes. I mean, that's certainly the case. Among many of the original economists that we covered, that's the case with Bentham and Mill and Adam Smith. And then you had the hard scrabble anarchists and Marxists. Like,
Marcus.
There's a reason that Bakunin is our sticker pack for this last month, because this motherfucker was just badass. He was a big man who told big stories, and he pissed people off. He was kicked out of multiple countries. He escaped from prison. He went all over the world.
He's like Jean Valjean.
He is Jean Valjean with a fucking attitude and an accent, and just and he's a glutton, and he's just bigger than life, and he was a total fucking badass. Marx died pretty much penniless, and you know, existed on the largesse of how Engels could support him. But this is another guy that was like, it ran from country to country, being kicked out of places, like Lenin living in exile and Trotsky living in exile most of his life and even being murdered in exile. Like, these were hard scrabble dudes. Rosa Luxemburg, maybe my favorite of the crew next to Bakunin, total fucking badass. Emma Goldman, another badass, a nurse who traveled the world, who was smart, told men to go fuck themselves if they were out of line. I mean, these are the people who spoke about praxis and spoke about high-minded concepts, but really were able to get dirty and in the muck. So if I take inspiration from anybody, it is certainly from that type of crew. And so yeah, praxis, and also people can go fuck themselves.
Yeah. And it also wouldn't hurt us to define words sometimes.
You are correct.
There are things that go over my head. Like when I yelled at you during the Roe v. Wade episode, extinguishing the penumbra. And I was like, I don't fucking know what that means.
Oh, yeah. I love learning about the penumbra.
There are just sometimes words. And also there are words like that in everyday language that you hear sometimes. You're like, I don't know. That what's happened where we're talking. I go, I don't know what that means.
Mm-hmm.
And I consider myself to have a good vocabulary. So
how many times do you bring things up and I'm like, I have no idea what that is?
That's really more with pop culture, not really with words.
Sometimes I feel like that you say things and I'm just like,
It's probably me just being like, she's a thotty. It's like, they're probably not real words, but either way, but you know, it happens to the best of us. But also if there is a word that we feel might be lightly inaccessible, it wouldn't hurt to define us.
True.
And also, what did you say to me before that I didn't understand? I think I just wasn't thinking. You said, can I give you something? What did you say? What did you say to me? Can I give ups to you?
Can I give it up to you?
I thought, you know what? You had just given me the credit card and I thought you were about to yell at me. And I wasn't thinking.
Yeah, because I'm a yeller.
No, you know when I say yell, I'm being hyperbolic. I'm sorry. I'm over exaggerating. But I was like, what the fuck are you saying to me? But I could
Can I give it up?
I could
can
not
I give it up?
Parse what that meant, but I get it now. But
give you props.
Yeah, that makes more sense.
Yeah.
But so there's sometimes it happens to all of us.
So we're in a new studio in a new building. And one of our great joys has been we're sort of in an alleyway where there's some parking spots that are kind of difficult to navigate. You got to know what you're doing to get in and get out of them. You learn the hard way the first time you do it, not to pull in front ways, that it's much better and easier to get the hell out of there if you pull in. And I can't for the life of me figure out the science of that. I don't understand why it's so much easier to back out of it, to get out of a tight spot going forwards than it is backwards. I just can't do it in my mind.
I think also like it's flipped in your brain because you're looking backwards. So you're not like, you don't have the same
maybe
visualization on it.
Yeah.
I don't know.
But the props I was giving 99 is that in the beginning stages, we took great pleasure at gathering at the window to watch 99 try to pull out of these parking spots. As she's looking, as we can see her looking through the windshield at us, looking at her and giving us the finger and then texting us afterwards. Fuck you guys. And I had to really give it up to her because I came here after hours. And there was nobody down there. I was like, ooh, good. I can pull into that spot. And no matter how many times I tried pulling into it, I was like, I am just not even lined up correctly. I don't even know. This is really hard to pull off. So I wanted to give my kudos to you for your parking ability.
Once I learned how to bat, like, it was very scary because you feel like you're going to hit the other cars.
Yeah.
And
the wall.
I do it pretty slowly in the mornings because I want to make sure I'm not hitting the wall. Once I learned how to back in there, I was like, oh, I got this.
Yeah.
I could not live without my backup camera. So it's not like I can't be like, I'm an expert parker. I use a crutch.
So I don't use my backup cameras all that often. Did I tell you what my daughter's friends call that?
Oh yeah. The hot dad.
The hot dad backup. Yeah. The arm over the seat, checking through the back window. Hot dad backup. Now I smile every time I do it. I'm like, hey, hot dad.
I do the dumb blonde backup, which is using my backup camera. But hey, which one gets us closer? The dumb blonde.
I'm telling you, giving you props, man.
Praxis.
All right, let's move on. We've got good friend of the show from Mexico, Elena S.
Yes, so Elena said, I'm in a very joyous mood because Claudia Sheinbaum won the election. It is so cool to have a leftist Jewish woman president. She will take office on the 1st of October. The news media in all three countries, Mexico, Canada, and the U.S., were totally full of great balls of steaming horseshit. Not only did they mention the problem of violence over and over again and exaggerated, but they never mentioned how drug addiction and lack of gun control in the U.S. has caused this problem. They said that Claudia and Xochitl were running neck and neck, and the male candidate, Jorge Maidez, said Claudia might win with 5 points. All that was cat diarrhea. Mm-hmm. She won with a 30-point advantage. The election went more smoothly than expected.
First of all, congratulations to all of our listeners down in Mexico that Claudia Sheinbaum. Did you see? I keep referencing it just because now, of course, it's all that comes up in my feed every Tuesday is Jon Stewart when he's talking about it.
I guess I just have to start watching it. Can you text
me? Just watch it once and then YouTube
will text me and remind me?
Yeah, of course.
Okay.
He said, I can't wait to see what NPR does with this president over the next several years, because they try to be so accurate and ethnic when they're pronouncing everything. Mm. So it's going to be like Claudia Sheinbaum. Very interesting stuff. So, Elena,
you're going to say it right. It's going to be a Sheinbaum. Sheinbaum. We're going to do the Jewish way.
Elena, I owe you this, and I've been circling around it for a while. I feel like I've done a lot of stuff on Latin America, more so than many other shows. So we've got the Washington Consensus. We've got, obviously, the border crisis, the Caribbean series, Cuba specifically.
The immigration episode.
Yep, twice.
Before the, yeah.
Right? So we have paid attention to it. We've never done a deep dive, which is, we did a deep dive on Canada, but we never did a specific deep dive on Mexico.
Man, we used to have fun, man.
I know.
What the fuck happened?
The Canada episode especially.
Yeah, the Australian one was fun too.
Oh, the Australian one was great. That was a lot of fun.
Maybe if we do Mexico, we got to get Tom on the horn. Or maybe we get like a Mexican artist. Like,
that would be nice.
To, you know, so it's a little more authentic and not whitewashed. No offense, Tom. We love you.
He's like the whitest cat that ever existed.
Yeah, I don't want him doing the Jon Stewart NPR.
The Canada one was so inspired. The Canada one is still, I think, my favorite.
No, you did an amazing job.
Right? The poutine call out was great.
Tim Hortons, eh?
God, that was good.
I mean,
his execution of that was just lights out.
I have become a true fan of his band Wolves of Glendale. Like, they tease, they're putting out a country song, I think, tomorrow, and I'm lit for it.
I love
it. It's been wonderful to watch him grow up, and from our little guy to a real guy out
and
there.
Totally out of our price range.
It's okay. Things happen. People change, and yep, people get bands and get talent agents.
Pretty cool.
Yeah, exactly. Pretty we knew cool. him when. So
yeah, we did.
Yeah. I knew him when.
We don't.
I met him.
We don't have a talent agency.
Oh, I thought you meant, no, yeah, no, no, absolutely.
Not,
I'm your
not
talent.
Us at all.
I'm your agent. You're my agent.
Yep, pretty much.
So I'll have your people call my people.
So maybe we will do it. Maybe we will have a little fun.
Yeah.
Down in Mexico.
We used to have more fun.
We did. Did.
Then the world sucked. And that was during COVID and the Trump presidency, and we had more fun somehow.
Yeah.
Well, we left on the balls end of Trump. Like, I made a, but I felt like it made sense.
Yeah.
You think like the balls end, like that was the end. Ooh. Of him.
Yeah.
The scrote bottom.
Wow.
The sack sunk.
Mm-hmm.
The sink sack.
I was in a friend's office the other day who wasn't there. He wasn't in his office. And so I texted him that, he said, I just put my nuts on your computer mouse for like a good 15 seconds. Just held them there.
I really
and it
hope
felt great.
You didn't.
Of course it did not.
I'm just checking.
Yeah, but I did.
I used to be like a boy's boy. So a boy's boy.
A fuck boy. So yeah, we'll get down to Mexico. We'll have a little more fun with it. I keep promising to have more fun in general.
You were from.
It's so funny that it's like, you know, when is the right time to introduce, I should have done a skit during Galloway maybe, or during Unfiltered or whatever. But when we do these deep dives, it just seems so weird and off-putting to jam a skit in the middle of these really serious things.
It's very Bo Burnham. You're really joking at a time like this. You're really joking at a time like this. Like that's that. How can we be funny when the world's ending?
Right. Those are hard to do too.
But I think people want it and I think they need it.
They do. They do. They do and they do. All right. We're going to go from Mexico to Sweden.
It's like the longest show notes ever. Sorry.
No, we're okay. John from Sweden said, my country is in the middle of the worst gang crisis it's ever faced.
That just feels anathema to Sweden.
Wow. Not going to get into the weeds about how we wound up here, but the upshot has been that the party politicians have made a steady shift rightward as the law and order element here, in this case led by the Sweden Democrats, a party with deep roots in the European Nazi neo-Nazism, pushes a messaging based on fear with no small dose of returning the country to its former glory. Sound familiar? And a public who is very tired of shootings in broad daylight on playgrounds. They target the fathers, but there's freaking kids there, as well as a lot of drugs and person trafficking. Sweden is a rather large country with a long and undefendable sea and mountain borders. Even the left of center social democrats have had to make a push for voters on the platform of tougher immigration laws. that might be a lot of fun to dig into at some point. I believe we covered this before, not in a formal way, in an episode, but we've covered this on show notes before, that Sweden has per capita some of the largest gun ownership in the world.
Right.
And, you know, listen, it's a bad, bad recipe, no matter how you slice it. So if there's, so they always say it's not the gun, it's the person pulling the trigger. Right. Okay. But there's no trigger to pull if there's no gun. Of course, that's why there's no gun violence in so many of these other countries.
Like Australia.
And, but they've been holding this up as an example because they're like, well, obviously it's not the guns. It is the people. Maybe we have more mental health issues. And both sides of the aisle actually held Sweden up as an example. So the left will hold Sweden up and say, look, they have the same type of quote unquote Second Amendment rights there. They just have really strict gun laws and policies, and it's very hard to procure one. But people have them. And the right will look at it and be like, the Swedes have guns and they can control themselves. Obviously, like, guns are not the problem. So don't try to take ours away. So there's a narrative line that both sides walk that's still completely erased by the fact that when there are no guns, there is no gun violence. So when things go badly economically or our racist tendencies come out, this is when these type of policies become a serious problem. So in the United States, we have very poor economics that leads to massive inequality, makes people desperate, and does lead in some cases to severe mental health issues that are largely socioeconomic in nature, because they might be otherwise more manageable if people weren't in crisis and had access to available therapeutics. So there's a through line there between socioeconomic status and mental health care. And also, there is deep and abiding racism in this country. It is from the founding. It is in our DNA, and it exists here just like it exists in every other part of the world. It is a fact.
I do think they have some, I'm not going to say severe because I can't speak to it, but I think they have some entrenched racism in
Sweden, good Lord.
And those countries.
I mean, they were not good actors in a time that everybody wants to forget, right?
Yeah, they're a very white population.
And look at what happened in the UK with the open borders, and which that led to Brexit, and it's led to all sorts of issues there among the population. Look at France as another example, and the influx of Muslims coming from North Africa into France, and that has created turmoil in a lot of the French cities. Now look at the influx of migrants into places like Scandinavia, and you're going to see this type of blowback. So the question then becomes, in the work that we have to do, John, look to you for some answers to this, is all things being equal, is Sweden having the same experience as other parts of the Scandinavia and Northern Europe? What's different about the immigration policies? What's different about the tendencies there? The history, is Sweden's history the same as it is in Norway? I don't really know, you know, relative to kind of past transgressions throughout the last century. And what are the gun laws like in these other places? What are the laws like generally? I mean, so now remember, Sweden is a little bit of an outlier. It is a very big country. It has a very independent economy in some ways. And it is a wealthier society than a lot of its counterparts. But it also has a very libertarian strain to it, lest we forget how they behaved during COVID. Remember that motherfucker that was on television every other day, it seemed, and he was like, no, they're going to ride it out. And everybody's like, really, Sweden? You're just riding it out? You're just no mask mandates? They're like, nope, it's fine. And they had a bigger death spike than a lot of their counterparts as a result of it. But they were like, that's okay. It's thinning the herd, as in herd immunity. I mean, no, maybe as they're in
survival of the fittest.
Yeah.
As in eugenics.
There we go. So maybe there's a little more fucked up strain there than, you know, just below the surface, maybe not that far, that we're not talking about openly. Be really curious to know. Not my wheelhouse, not a part of the world. Been there.
Really?
Been there, but not a part of the world that I can actually say that I love.
There was a fun sitcom called Welcome to Sweden. It was
in my dark years.
No, it was a couple of years ago. It was Amy Poehler's brother, Greg. He is married to a Swedish woman and he lives there now. And so it's sort of about like moving to Sweden from America and what like culture shock and what it's like there. I liked it. I thought it was very funny, but I didn't do well. It's probably so like how I learned the most I know about Sweden.
Was in Sweden for a very brief time twice, and spent more time in Denmark. And I
happiest people, aren't they? That's always the report.
Man, I
the happiest people in the world.
And I left depressed. I really did.
Because everyone's poor there, right? Aren't they poor but happy?
Homogeneous. I cannot wrap my mind around any sort of homogeneous society. I just can't. And I think that's just a reflection of the culture that we've grown up in. But it made me sad after a few days.
You mean you and all your bro friends don't look the same? Just because one of them is bald?
Yeah. Is that, what's your definition? Yeah. I, you know where I live.
Yeah.
Right? It's just, it's pretty culturally rich in a weird way. And I.
Rich isn't diverse.
Diverse. Culturally rich and diverse.
Just clarifying.
Yeah.
That, I mean, it's also slightly affluent.
And it's certainly got pockets of unbelievable, extraordinary affluence. But it trains your eye and your being and your body to just like, I think, experience the world a little differently. And when I went there, it was true reverse culture shock. I was like, whoa, this is so fucking white and everything's the same and everything's so clean and just like pristine.
Oh, no.
It's just like
clean and pristine. Horrible.
I know. I don't know why I had such a visceral reaction to it. My wife loved it.
You feel that way in Disney World?
Yes, yes. No, Disney World makes me very, very sad.
Because it is like the true bottom of society there sometimes.
Nah, just the again, the Satanness of it. There's just the homogeneity of it. Is that the word?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, it depends. If you're going for like homogenous,
yeah,
you're just saying it differently.
Okay, good.
Or I think that's a fair word for it.
So let's actually end up. John has a closing thought before we get to Linda. John's closing thought there is the continent is shifting under our feet, and frankly, I'm nervous. For my son,
plate
above
tectonics.
All. And there are plenty of days where I wish I was able to pull myself out of the doom scroll and do something, which is one of the reasons I love this group. I actually feel like at least I have a voice, and you got to start unfucking the Republic somewhere.
Yeah, get some. I'll send you like a box of stickers and you can just plaster them, ruin all the.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Good stuff. Nothing would make me happier than seeing Bakunin's face spread all over America and Sweden.
But you have to remember to get the Bakunin stickers.
That's right.
Sorry.
That's right.
Sorry, I can't mail those out. I also can't mail out regular stickers. Because last time we did it, we got a bunch of weird people asking for stickers, 1,000 of them.
That's because, yeah, somebody screwed us and put us on a free forum, right?
Yeah. So they ruined the fun for everyone.
All right. Let's get on to a good friend of the show, Linda P.
Linda said, thanks for reading and compressing Project 2025 for us. Something that I noticed was the ambition to remove federal flood protection from the federal government and ask states to do that. That is among many proposals that will harm the middle class and an angry middle class that feels unsafe. They often believe lies and vote Republican. What do you think about state responsibilities / federal responsibilities?
Yeah, I think that's one of those real hidden below the surface and dangerous things that can happen like day one. It's interesting. They wanted to get rid of FEMA and they wanted to get rid of, bizarrely, airport security, help me out, and TSA. And they lumped them together in the same section as agencies that are completely unnecessary.
Yeah, you're right. Let's talk about what happened when we didn't have as rigorous of a TSA, lest we never forget.
Right. So that's a bizarre one to come from Republicans, because there was no, my recollection of the TSA was that there was no follow-up to that. There was no, like, it was just like, and that's stupid. So that'll go away.
Of course, because it's imposing on their rights to bring big shampoo bottles on
planes. Right. And guns.
It's about the shampoo.
But the FEMA part, this has been a longstanding policy desire on the Republican side. And it kind of defies the map, because most of the places that wind up, so New York during Sandy and Irene got a lot of federal aid, and Jersey as well. And they were really upset about that.
Stronger than the storm. Whoa.
God.
My favorite commercials. We're stronger than the storm. That's right, Dad. It's Chris Christie and his daughters.
By the way, the Christie meme of him in a chair on the beach on top of everything.
Yeah.
Will always make me laugh.
It's a good one.
You could put it anywhere and I will always laugh at
that. And the videos of there's the video comp of him in a press conference about the bridge, like Bridgegate, yeah. And be like, no, I won't talk about it. No more questions. he is just a meme factory.
He is.
Like, what's his face? He's him and Rob Ford. Rip.
It's sad that he has gone down in flames for actually being a truth teller on the Republican side. Like, he went down in flames for all the wrong fucking reasons. You know? Anyway, that came up and I got it where they were like, oh, fuck New York, fuck New Jersey. All right. You know, that's a typical talking point.
But
the most part, and fuck New Jersey. Let's just be clear. But I think a lot of the talking points came up and really crystallized shockingly around Katrina. Dun, dun, dun. Then it was all of a sudden, it seemed wasteful, right? Oh, Puerto Rico, it's wasteful. New York, it's wasteful. But most of the time, FEMA is being scrambled to very robust and red states. So Florida and Texas come to mind, wrapping the Gulf. They're always in the eye of multiple different types of storms. And because they have both chosen to have very loose, deregulated infrastructure from an energy standpoint and a transportation standpoint, it means that they're actually built to be more susceptible to large-scale weather events, to the downside of large-scale weather events. Now, the one thing Florida got figured out is hurricane-proof codes. So a lot of their buildings are very, very good in that way. But infrastructure and planning and any sort of centralized planning, it's really not. And then also they have huge mobile home communities in both of these states that always kind of get wiped out. But it's the infrastructure in particular that is always susceptible to these big weather events. And so I actually struggle to understand this, because they're not suggesting that they just shift dollars, like they raise taxes federally and then just give it to the states to decide what to do. They're talking about cutting off the federal flow altogether and just having states decide. So you're already in a situation where in Florida, nearly every new home, new community, and new commercial property is uninsurable. You're already there.
Right.
Because the private insurance companies have pulled up stakes, and Governor DeSantis gave them the ability to do that. And they don't have the same type of statewide insurance pool backstop that other states do. So not only does it not make sense, they don't even have the mechanisms in the states that they control that are theoretically coordinating with the Heritage Foundation to propose something like this. So I don't get it, Linda. It's one of the big head scratchers. And if anybody else has ideas as to why they do it other than the patently racist concepts that came out of Katrina, which is why they didn't want to go support FEMA in the first, that's where that all kind of really came up. Other than that, if you can really connect the dots for me from a policy perspective, I'm open, because I'm lost on this one.
It's also just like natural disasters are some of the worst things that can happen to people. And to not give them support in that time is just criminal.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you see videos and like even like flash floods, people's just houses being ripped out of the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, that's everything someone owns.
Dude, tornadoes might be the scariest thing
so
ever.
So scary. You know what? I just was reminded of it. I had like a traumatic flashback. Remember like the big tsunami that happened in, it was like 2003 or something?
In Thailand?
Yes.
Yeah.
I couldn't remember what country
because
I was 8. But I used to be so terrified. I thought it was going to happen here. And I was like, you know, an 8-year-old like at night being like, please don't tsunami here. Yeah. But like,
that is super terrifying.
It's just like, that's what's so scary. Like, there's just so many scary things that the earth can do, you know, as if we don't have it bad enough with man-made war and weapons. We have to worry about our homes being ripped from the ground and people. It's just so upsetting. So we should be doing as much as we can to help people in those situations.
Did you see The Impossible, that movie? It was from, I think, the year after what you're talking about with Ewan McGregor and Naomi Watts.
Mm-mm.
It's about a couple on vacation in the tsunami.
I remember it.
Fucking terrifying.
Isn't it like a...
So well done.
A true story?
I think so, yeah. Yeah.
Terrifying.
Yeah.
So terrifying. And
one kid lives by diving in a pool.
Right.
And the whole, the whole planet just like goes over the... I mean, it's just wild.
Have you ever seen The Knowing?
No.
It's a Nick Cage movie. And it's like the movie starts and it's like his son or daughter or something is writing all this like codes on the wall and they don't know what it means and they're trying to figure it out. I don't really remember the movie that well, but the signing of the apocalypse, essentially.
Got it.
And at the end of the movie, he like gets home and like makes it just in time and like hugs his family and like a fucking meteor or something just wipes out the whole earth.
Shit.
And I think I watched it with my dad. So I was not a movie I would have watched on my own. Again, I was probably, what year did it come out?
It's only 2009.
Okay. So I guess I was old enough, but still.
Yeah, I was like 50.
That is like burned in my brain of like, that's going to happen to me sometimes. Like if I see something weird in the sky, I'm like, it's happening. Can you tell I'm mentally ill?
It's only got a 35 on Rotten Tomatoes, but it looks like a pretty decent premise.
Terrible.
It's terrible.
Well, I mean, I don't even remember. I'm just scared of it because I'm scared it's going to happen. But natural disasters are so scary.
Scary.
And I want people to be safe in their home.
Yeah, and by the way, red states, you're the ones in the, you're
it,
yeah, in it.
It all happens in the middle. Tornado Alley is literally right there.
In the middle.
It is the middle.
You know, in flyover country.
we have the hurricanes. They have everything else.
Yep.
There was a small tornado here once.
Yeah. More than once.
I was at the driving range.
So what year?
I don't know. I was like 4.
Okay.
And so, there was like a little baby tornado.
Yeah.
And I was at, so it would have been like 2000, maybe, roughly.
Okay.
Maybe, I don't know, maybe earlier. But I was weirdly at the driving range, and I have this vivid memory, all the buckets of balls being swept up in a cyclone.
No.
Yes. No. I swear. Yes. Yes.
You didn't see that.
Yes, I did.
That's from Twister.
No.
And retconning right now.
I'm not.
What does retcon stand for?
It's not an acronym.
Okay.
Retroactive continuity. Oh, so it's not an acronym. It's just an abbreviation.
Got it.
Sorry.
Say it again.
Retroactive continuity.
Got it.
I
said retcon at home. My girls didn't know what it was. And I was like, they're like, well, what does it stand for? I was like, duh. If you know, you know.
I swear I saw this. Like my 101, I think, would back me up.
Okay.
It was small. We'll go to the tape. Like a tiny, tiny cyclone. So I don't know if it was because we were in like a wind tunnel almost, like the way it was built, but they were going up in a little cyclone.
I still don't believe you.
Why?
Do
you think it is?
That's bananas.
Do you not believe me because I was a kid and I'm an unreliable witness, or do you not think it happened?
Unreliable witness.
Okay.
Yeah. So let's get 101 on the case.
Okay.
Also, where were your parents?
I was with my dad.
Okay, just checking.
And then I remember we went to the men's bathroom.
So put him on the case.
Everyone went inside.
I forgot. Fuck 101's unreliable narration.
Okay,
as well.
I'm going to see him tonight.
Okay, good.
I will ask him and I'll text you back.
Okay.
We'll update on the next episode.
That sounds good.
I vividly remember it.
There was a tornado that came up the street that I was living on.
I don't believe you.
I was a grown up. It was the house that I owned. So I was a real grown up then. It ripped the whole fucking street up.
Really?
Like it had directions. Like it was weird. Yeah. That
your
street
fancy
was out
landscaping company.
That street was out. No more. Do it myself now.
DIY.
DIY, baby. My yard has never looked better.
Your grass
still no
looked
pesticides.
Really nice.
Thank you. Taking a lot of pride in that. No pesticides, nothing crazy. I'm just doing it all naturally.
Do you have grass in your backyard yet, though?
I have, at dusk, what appears to be a lawn.
Okay.
But it's made up of
weeds.
So many different things.
That's good for the environment. Diversity.
Works for me.
You know, people who have like clover lawns, like that's really good. at Spongy.
Yeah, my kids are very sweet. My eldest said, "Dad, you know, there's a whole trend on TikTok that there's people that grow clover lawns. Look at you ahead of the game." I'm like, that's not what I wanted to hear, sweetie, but thank you.
I've never understood that. Like, when we had weeds in my backyard, if they look like grass, who gives a fuck?
Not this guy.
Yeah.
But the front, I care. That's keeping up the Jones thing. That's just appearances. So I worked really hard. Hand plucked every single dandelion and every single little patch of crabgrass. And then raked, really, really give it a good raking. And then a lot of seed and a lot of organic fertilizer.
How's your back?
Oh, I'm like, I'm just totally like out of commission. But that's okay. All right, one more. It's a long one. It's a good one, though.
I thought we were reading.
Which one do you want to do?
I thought we were reading Peter D's.
You can read that one now. Go ahead.
All right. Peter D wrote in and said, "You commies are just too funny. Stop spreading your nonsense. People might just take you serious." And his, we have an option to give your pronouns. And his was said, "I was born a man. I'll always be a man."
Yeah.
And I want to see, Peter, I'm glad that you're so secure in your gender identity. Mm-hmm. That's what we want.
Proud of you.
We want in society for people to be that secure.
So if you ever write in again, we will be sure to always refer to you as Peter D, he, him.
Yes.
Because you are secure.
He, him, his.
He, him, his. So here's the last one that I'll read out. I don't have much. We've covered this a lot, so I don't have much to say in it. But I think it is still the general reflection of what a lot of people on the left are thinking and feeling and struggling with. And so this is from Noah Jay, who said, "I'm at the end of my rope with the they both suck rhetoric. Let's actually fucking look at the claim. One is a convicted fraudster and rapist. One is talking about a third term. One is currently facing over 80 criminal charges. One posted Nazi rhetoric on his social media. They are not the same. Biden isn't the progressive we need, but anyone fucking stupid enough to think Biden is an equal threat as Trump should be evaluated by a licensed mental professional. Now that I have word vomited, my question to you, NFTR, is how do we combat the narrative already being established to question the election and stop the moronic comparison of Biden being as bad as Trump? This isn't a Max B pro Biden topic. I mean, how can we meet people on their level and try to make a meaningful difference in the political discourse when the other side would question the color of the sky if Cruz, Trump, or any Republican mouthpiece asked them to? Obama wasn't perfect. Fuck, I could present a TED talk on every mistake he made with the Affordable Care Act. I'll even go back to the scandals of I did not have sexual relations with that woman that continue in the current political space. I don't see this getting any better over the next 5 months or 2 years if Trump loses again. From my non-binary family, my female family and friends, and the kids just trying to get an education for the betterment of society, I can't just walk away from the fight either. What tips can you share so as not to lose hope? Maybe I'm just tired. Any step forward in Arizona is met with two steps back. Am I the only one struggling with this?" You're not the only one struggling with it, Noah Jay. The only thing that I can offer is what we've offered before, is that in our episode on the progressive meditation, we've already lost the election. We've already lost the election. In our day-to-day advocacy, what we have always said, or said at least from the beginning, the one consistent thread we have is you have to question power, and Biden's in power right now. It is our job, our responsibility, our duty, 364 days to question that authority and bring these issues to light, because we can't just pass them over. We have to criticize him on the border, have to criticize him on the economy, to criticize him on his on the way that he's managing the conflict in Israel and Palestine. We can criticize him for not taking any sort of diplomatic steps to bring an end to the war in Ukraine. We can criticize him for not taking any diplomatic steps or taking the lead in the United Nations to bring some sort of relief and conclusion to the civil war in Sudan, and on and on and on. But on that day, when on the one day it is our united civic duty to pull the lever, please feel free, all of you, to pull the lever for Biden if you feel that you can do so. And you can do so, by the way, with a clear conscience, if for no other reason than to protect marginalized people, especially from the LGBTQ community. That is where I've landed very firmly, because there are things that can be done through executive order, and even with a divided Congress, that can make life incredibly miserable for marginalized people in this country.
And women.
And women, absolutely. So we know the big stuff has to be done legislatively. We know it has to be a big policy movement. None of the things that need to happen on a big scale, none, are on the ballot. RFK doesn't represent them. Trump doesn't represent them. Biden doesn't represent them. And I agree with you. They're not all the same thing, but they are the ones that are in contention. So you could say, hey, Jill Stein's on the ballot. And I say, vote for Jill Stein. If you are in a position to do so in a state where the Green Party is on the ballot and you feel like it's not going to jeopardize the chances in a protest vote that would throw the election to Trump, you may say Cornel West represents how I feel. And if he's on the ballot in the state that you live in and you feel like it's not going to, you know, materially change the outcome, I say vote Cornel West with a clear conscience as well. But you can do, you can, it, with your personal vote, which is your personal moment to have a civic impact on the national discourse, vote for Biden with a clear conscience. If you just put women, marginalized people, African Americans, Muslims in this country, Palestinians, transgender people, whatever community you want to hold in your mind and in your heart at that moment, you're doing it for them and you can feel okay about it.
Yeah.
And then it's back to work.
I'm comfortable saying that I will most likely vote for Biden, but I'm not voting for Biden. I'm voting against Trump.
Again.
That's what it is.
Right.
He's not, I'm not for him.
Right.
He's not my guy.
Yep.
But I'm voting against Trump. And that I will sleep okay at night, because if I was part of in any way part of a situation that helped get Trump reelected.
Yeah.
It's frightening. And what's happening right now is frightening. But it can only get worse. Trump loves Israel.
none of us can predict the future, obviously. And a guess for any one of these candidates is just as valid as the person sitting next to you. Whatever is going to happen is going to happen. But most of the conversations that I'm having with fellow leftists off microphone is that very, very few people believe that Biden is winning. It's just, if we were held tomorrow, I think we're fucked. But there's a political lifetime, as they say, between now and the actual election. So we'll see. So I think we have a few other comments because we had waited so long, but we're at time. So I think we should, first of all, thank the new members that have come in. So we've got Hot Scott. We've got a re-up from Sloppy Joe and Derek R.
Supac, Coffee Casey, Beck Def, and Soul Free.
Outstanding. Thank you to all of the members who are supporting this show. And we're going to close out with a review, which we sometimes forget to encourage people to do it. It's the cheapest, fastest, easiest, freest thing that you could do to support the show. And that's leave us a raving review, a 5-star, whatever the maximum allowable stars on your podcast app is for Unfucking the Republic. And this one is from ID3121 that says, recently getting back into UNFTR after a brief hiatus. It's always sourced really well and the information is compelling. So that's it, Unfuckers. I hope you enjoyed the PBM episode. I am very anxious to hear your feedback on it, and we'll get back into having some fun and digging through some new shit, you know, just around the corner. Who the fuck knows when?
Good job.
Thanks.
I did see a tornado.
Did you just check?
No, I'm just telling you.
Yeah.
I know what I saw.
Okay. Retcon.
No.
Bye.
You're a buttcon.
Silly.